This is Maria with The Why, from Success to Startup Show, bringing you the whys of entrepreneurship on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3 SoCalArmenian.com. Hello, welcome to Startup to Success. My guest today is Beryl Solomon, who's an entrepreneur and a business leader at heart. She founded Poplar, the modern drug store, in 2018 after personally discovering natural medicine solutions. Beryl, I am so excited to have you on the show. So excited about the topics we're going to discuss. But before I begin about all the excitement and everything else that my audience will know shortly why I'm so excited, I want to learn why you started Poplar.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. And I'm super psyched to sort of dive into all of the details. But the short story goes, in 2017, I was looking for a natural alternative to my anti-anxiety medication. I was on Prozac. I was on Prozac partially, I think, because I'm an overachieving female, entrepreneurial mother, trying to balance all the things. I also had sort of a, you know, personal life tragedy. I lost a brother and I was diagnosed with PTSD. So I was diagnosed with PTSD. I was put on medication and I took it for years and it worked. You know, like SSRIs are a real thing. And I believe there is a place and time for them. So I was on it for many years through one of my pregnancies. It is one of the SSRIs that they say is safe through pregnancy. And I really just felt like it was time to reevaluate. You know, I'd been on it for a while. I felt like I'd stabilized and I didn't view it as a forever. So during sort of a routine doctor's appointment, I said, hey, listen, what are my natural alternatives? And the white male doctor looked at me and said, we don't really recommend women like you go off their anti-anxiety medication. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? You know? So obviously I said a lot of bad words internally, but externally I said, well, thank you very much. I will see you never. And I left the doctor and I turned to Google, you know, which I think now we're having a real conversation about, not just you and I, but culturally, we're having a conversation about women's health and how to sort of not ignore what women say and, you know, all of those conversations. But this, that was not happening in 2017. It was very much, oh, well, my doctor said, no, I'm going to turn to the internet. So I Googled natural alternative, you know, to anti-anxiety medication. And the internet kept saying cannabis, weed, cannabis. And I was like, no way. That thing I smoked in college, like, from a bong in my boyfriend's room, like that can't be the thing that, you know, is going to solve my problems. But it, I guess it lit a fire and I wanted to know more and I started researching and, you know, I guess the rest is history. I did significantly decrease my, you know, anti-anxiety medication. And I use cannabis instead, a combination of CBD, THC, and other cannabinoids. And while I was going through my personal discovery, I just kept thinking about how if I'm having such a hard time, right? And I have, you know, thank God I have many resources and people and a network and support and all of those things. And if it's hard for me, it must be hard for everyone to sort of navigate this. And, you know, I bumped up against stigmas. I bumped up against challenges. And I just, my background is fashion and retail. I was working this whole time and I just couldn't shake the idea that cannabis needed a rebrand and that based on my experience, I wanted to do that. And so I decided, I saw sort of the CBD craze coming and I thought that would be a great first step. Because it is, you know, not psychotropic, it doesn't make you high. And I think that's a great entry point. And so I turned to my husband one night while we were eating sushi. I was like, yeah, so I'm going to work in cannabis. He was like, you know, like, I think like he like spit tuna tartare all over the table. And, yeah, I mean, but honestly, the rest is history. And usually I'm super excited about being in the space, but it's a complicated space and I'm sure we'll get into that. But, yeah, so I run a, e-tail, website that sells a curation of CBD products and other health and wellness tools. And hopefully we will open cannabis dispensaries in New York when the time comes.
Oh my God. Wow. What a story. And I went through a similar story with my Roma Leaf brand. I remember telling my husband that CBD is helping with my, it's really helping my hemiplegic migraines. And he's like, well, that's great. Good. Keep on using it. And I'm like, no, I actually want to start my own brand. And he's just like, what? With you, everything you like, you just want to have your own brand. I'm like, it's not about that. It's about the quality. And I need it to be, you know, potent, and I need it to have no THC so that I can focus at work and all the stuff.
Right.
And that's sort of, I had to convince my husband to start it too. But I'll tell you, the first few years were very difficult, especially being in production and manufacturing and trying to source all the right products, which I'm kind of happy you're not in that part of things, you know. You're
I think
not that your job is easier, because then you have to find all the best products and you have to really do your research to make sure that they are who they are, or they are who they say they are, right?
Well, honestly, I think you know, you sort of mentioned it, like, because I'm in New York and honestly not in California, I think I would have probably viewed the industry different. Yeah. If I was living in California, because you have, you know, access to growers, and I was living in New York City, so it's not like I had access to farms and, you know, things of that nature. And being from fashion and retail, I know how hard it is to create a product. So I was like, let's try this curation instead and see how it goes. Thinking it was going to be easier, I'm not sure, but that was the lot I chose. So here we are.
But let's talk a little bit about the challenges. And I want to talk a little bit about marketing, because, you know, I feel like anybody who succeeds with marketing, marketing a cannabis product, can succeed in any other industry, any other vertical, and with any other product, it's so much more faster than, you know, being in this industry. But like, let's talk a little bit about marketing, because that's been one of my biggest challenges as a marketing expert. I own an agency. I have government sector clients. I have Fortune 500 clients. I mean, if anyone should be able to crack the code on this, it should be me. And I'm not able to still do it. And it frustrates me. It frustrates me so much. So I would love to hear it from you.
Absolutely. Well, I wish I had, you know, sort of that, I don't know, silver bullet, but I don't. But I'll tell you a little bit about the journey and sort of all the things that I've tried and, you know, what I'm working on now. But so when I launched Poplar in November 1st, 2018, which seems like a lifetime ago, part of my sort of genius idea, I don't know if it really ended up being genius, but in theory, was that we would have a duplicate site that was an informational hub that wouldn't sell anything, that would literally be a skin that any click would then take you to a different site that would actually sell the CBD. So that was sort of my, like, oh my gosh, like, not that I'm smarter than the system, but
you are.
Maybe this is an opportunity. Maybe there's a way, you know? And so I tried that. And at the beginning it worked. I think that's the thing with cannabis and marketing. It's not necessarily that nothing is successful. It's that things are successful for like a second. And then you have to, right? And then you almost like get excited because they do work for a minute. And then, you know, either the algorithm or the system or the this or the Facebook or, you know, or Instagram or whatever. And then you just get, it becomes frustrating. It's very hard to navigate. And I think it's also incredibly hard to navigate as a small business, because you sometimes see things that large companies are doing and it becomes so frustrating. Why can this large company do it? You know, for example, Sephora was one of the first, you know, large companies to sell CBD. And I remember saying to all the marketing agencies I spoke to, but why can Sephora do it, right? If there's a carousel of images and it starts with shampoo, conditioner, and then all of a sudden there's a CBD cream, why can Sephora do it? And, you know, and no one had an answer, really. I mean, I think it just came back to dollars spent. And, you know, Sephora was probably marketing so many things that CBD kind of was able to slip through the cracks. But when your platform is about CBD and is about education around cannabis, because CBD, you know, and cannabis are the same thing, there are differences for sure, but when you start saying hemp-derived CBD and you start saying THC, they're different. But cannabis is an umbrella that does encompass all of those things. And there are very strict rules and regulations. And although it is legal to sell in all 50 states and to, you know, ship across state lines, hemp-derived CBD in particular, based on the Hemp Farm Bill passed in December of 2018, it's still, the regulations are slow. People don't understand it. You know, I think there was a story last year about like a grandma in Disney World that got arrested for having CBD because they thought it was cannabis. You know, it's just, it's tricky and confusing in real life and digitally. And I think, you know, now it really just, our marketing strategy, quite frankly, is a podcast, talking with people like you, speaking and really engaging with our community organically. The paid opportunities, I mean, we've tried and they just don't work for us right now based on our scale. That doesn't mean that I would say to anyone, your marketing plan won't work. But I think, you know, I think it's a hard go out there for CBD.
Yeah. And I agree 100%. And I did try a lot of things and I felt the same way that the minute it would work, we would get excited. And then right before, you know, we would find the way to like scale it to a whole different level, it would stop working. And I was like, was it the scaling? Was it the optimization? No, it's usually the algorithms changing or whatever it is, or they catch it. And then they're like, oh yeah, it's not illegal for you to do this and that. Now our journey kind of, we opened the retail store and I would say that's where our journey got a little easier. And it's so crazy because I've been in the e-commerce space since 2002 and I've been a huge advocate online retail and so on, and really against the whole brick and mortar store concept. And my husband had to convince me to open up a brick and mortar store, and he said, people need to be educated. People need to know that you're going to be here tomorrow if this thing doesn't work, so they can come back and return it. And my God, I can't tell you how much that, how correct my husband was and how much that impacted our business in such a positive way. And we grew so rapidly the minute we opened the retail store. So I highly recommend and hope that you will open the retail store soon, because that will transform your business and make things so much easier. But I did have some success with influencer marketing, still do, where I felt like if influencers were promoting it by using it and then had a promo code, that would generate some sales to us. Not as the ROI wasn't there as much as I hoped it would be, but you know, we would get content from it as well as sales here and there. So that tend to, that worked a little bit.
And that makes total sense. I mean, everything you said about the retail store makes sense. The challenge, I think, in again, at this time, I was living in New York City. I now live in Long Beach, Long Island. But, you know, to open a retail store in New York is no easy feat. Not to say opening a retail store in LA is easy. That's certainly not my point. But it's a different market. You know, when I was worried about the rent and the this and the that. And, you know, and also the other thing, you're totally right. If you have a brand with products, I do think the influencer marketing bit and the codes and the promos works. But for us, getting back to the manufacturing, since I'm not creating my own product, but rather trying to be a go-to destination, it's a little bit like, well, sure, I'll send someone a package, but if they repost, you know, product 1, 2, 3, it's not necessarily guaranteed that product 1, 2, 3 is going to send them to me, right? And yes, even if they also tag Poplar, or even if they, it's more complicated. And so again, it just becomes one of those, like what we're trying to do is create trust and build community. And so what we ended up also doing was creating these bundles. So really trying to talk about what cannabis and CBD can address. So we did a bunch of testing and figured that the trifecta was pain, stress, and sleep, right? There's no one that sort of doesn't struggle with one of those. And then with like sort of a small side of gut health and sex, that's sort of what we find as like 4 and 5. But for 1, 2, and 3, the reality is that people liked that messaging. And so what we did is we created kits around that, around those topics. So then it was kind of like multiple brands. So then I created a rule that was sort of like every Poplar image needs to have 2 products from 2 different brands, right? So there would be a reason to come to Poplar so that you would be able to sell, so we would be able to sell people multiple different brands. And there was a reason to come to us versus going to those brands.
Oh, I like that. That's a good strategy. And I, you know, I didn't think of that. That would influencer marketing would be hard for you to do because you're really ultimately promoting the brand and people would just, the message would get lost, right? Unless you have a store and you do experiential marketing where the influencers come to your store, do a story, do a reel, and then that way you can. So see, you got to open a retail store. Let's talk a little bit about funding. Let's talk about a little bit, just a tiny bit about that, because I was going to start raising money back in 2020, I want to say, or 21, I'm sorry, 21. I was prepping my pitch decks and my projections and all of that fun stuff. And then I got pregnant and I said, who's going to give a pregnant lady money? So I just paused the whole thing. And then when we opened the retail store, things started getting better. And I was like, I don't know now if I want to raise. So now I'm at a point where I'm really debating, do I want to raise funds? Do I not? Do I want to scale the business when marketing is so challenging? How would I scale the business, right? Like, how am I going to use the funds to grow it? So a lot of questions. And I'm wondering what your experience is with the whole finance sector, the area.
No, listen, it's funny. There was an article actually, I think it was literally yesterday in one of the cannabis entrepreneur magazines. And it was like, it is harder for women to raise money in cannabis than men. And I wanted to be like, is that a story? Like, don't we know that? Like, that's the revelation. Like, it's hard for women to raise money. And it's hard because when we're looking to raise money, typically we're also building our family and we're pregnant and we're running around and we want flexibility, and flexibility doesn't equal not working hard, right? Because it may equal actually working well more than your average person works during a normal day. So yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things to unpack from the money raising perspective. The reality is once you raise money, you are beholden to other people, even if they're your friends, even if they're your friends and family, even if they're your parents. Obviously that's still different. That's a bit different than an institutional investor, but you know, that's the reality. So I think a bit of it is, you know, is your business going to grow significantly with an influx of cash? So to your point of like, will that really move the needle? Because if it's just going to organically grow, there are so many great businesses that can be profitable, that can grow 10 to 15% year over year. You take those profits, you reinvest them in your business, and you grow, and you know, and you own 100% of it. And then at the end, either you take the money and run, or you sell it, or you pass it to your children, right? Whatever sort of your plan and your vision is. But I think if you're really looking for explosive growth, and explosive is like, you know, you want to grow year over year in the hundreds, thousands, multiple, I don't know how you do that without access to capital. And so that access can be through debt, not necessarily in the cannabis world, because they won't give debt and loans, and it's harder for women to get debt and loans and credit lines and all those things. But you can do it that way. But typically it's the raising money way. And I think as women, we have sort of, there's a bit of this, like, I'm going to raise money, it's hard, but I'm going to do it, and I'm going to prove that I can do it. And, you know, obviously, kudos to us and all of us that have, you know, been able to sort of eke it out. But like, I do think you're right in asking the question. It's not a one size fits all. Just because you want to grow your business doesn't mean you want to raise money. We are currently in the process of raising money. And the reason we're doing that, that's a great transition, is because we're going to go after the cannabis market in New York. We are going to apply for dispensary licenses. And in order to do that, the capital is just so far, you know, sort of beyond what my friends and family and my husband and I can put into the business, because we're expecting explosive growth. So I think when that's the case, when you're, you know, when you're talking about it that way, then it makes sense. And I think we're doing something super creative, because the way we're raising money, and this is actually where I think women can be equally, if not more successful than men in the fundraising, is to put our spin on it. So the way I'm raising money right now is, you know, through equity. I'm giving away equity in my company. But because I need the funds to apply for and then open a cannabis dispensary, I'm only collecting 25% of the commitments up front, and I'm reserving the remaining 75% for when I win the license. Because obviously everyone asks me, oh, I'm giving you this money. Like, how do you know you're going to win a license? Listen, no one knows anything. How does a t-shirt company know they're going to be the next t-shirt company? Right. Like, no one has a crystal ball. I mean, I guess if you're, you know, Rihanna and Beyonce, like, that's a different story. But for those of us, you know, who are not, there is no guarantee. So how do you de-risk it? And I think thinking creatively about that. And when I talk to people and say, listen, yes, I want the full commitment and all the paperwork has the full commitment, because I may have to show that for my application. I may need to say, hey, I'm going to be a successful business because I have money. One of the reasons, because I have money in the bank, but also the opportunity to be creative, right? And no one else is telling me what to do. And like, again, I guess between you, me, and your listeners, like, I don't think any man would be like, but I'll only take 25%, you know? But I have the opportunity to do that. And people who might otherwise be risk averse to an investment are kind of like, yeah, dude, this chick is going to make it happen, right? Is going to figure it out. It's going to be creative. It's going to be scrappy and is not going to waste all my money on, you know, sort of step one before she gets to step two. So, you know, it's complicated. Again, it's always complicated. It's, you know, it takes lawyers and pitch decks, and you kind of look at social media and see these female run businesses that maybe have raised, you know, millions of dollars on Series C and et cetera. And I keep saying, like, you know, you got to put your blinders on, you got to stay focused, you got to be creative and put you into it, because that is ultimately what people are investing in, right? People come and buy CBD from you and go to your retail store because it's you, because you infuse you into it. And hopefully people are writing me checks and ultimately shopping, you know, at my dispensary because of the vibe I've created and the vision and the customer service and the experience, which is an extension of me, right? And all the things that I sort of do.
I love it. And I wish you so much luck. I hope next time you you'll have your license and you'll have the retail store and we can talk about all the experiential marketing stuff that I will be encouraging you to do with all the influencers.
Beyond. I can't wait.
Where can listeners get a hold of you and learn more about your company and you?
Yeah, so definitely check us out online. So we have a website and we sell amazing CBD products and other health and wellness tools. So it's www.shop.poplar.com. You can also follow us on Instagram at Poplar, P-O-P-L-A-R. And you can hit me up personally on Instagram. I'm at Beryl Aliza, which is B-E-R-Y-L-A-L-I-Z-A. I go through fits and spurts of being active and then being dormant to try to take care of business, but I always respond. I love mentoring. I love answering questions. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.